Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
100 years ago, we were renaming, we were on a night out after a Bulls game, and we were renaming the Seven Dwarfs. And there were two that I thought were excellent. One was Fidgety, just because you could see a dwarf being fidgety, like Sneezy.
Yeah.
You're Sneezy!
The other was Bookie.
You know, for a bartender, Bookie, you're awfully judgmental.
The idea that you had a guy who was just constantly laying
making
on.
Bets.
Oh, my God. Be hilarious.
Bookie. One of the seven
Bookie
dwarfs.
And Fidgety. Those are two of my favorites of the renamed dwarfs from that night on the town. Our session out.
Hi-ho, hi-ho, it's home from work we go.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Hi ho, hi ho, hi ho, hi ho.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. They did it. Yes, they did it. They got a French teenager. Maybe not the guy we thought, but that's pretty cool.
Good morning, Molly. Happy Thursday.
Vive la France.
The Bulls got their guy, and it was a Frenchman. They did make a French connection. Not the one that we thought, but it was one nonetheless. And we will spend today, and maybe the next several months, hopefully not years, determining whether or not this was a good pick.
Do they pick their toes in Poughkeepsie? That remains the big question.
That's a very good question.
French Connection.
It's a very
joke.
Good question. Yes, I know. It's I only set you up there.
From like, I don't know, what was that, 50 years ago?
What are we to make of Noah Essengay? What are we to make of the way the Bulls approach this draft and the results of their first overall pick, 12th in the first round, and guys on the board that we had hoped that they would take and they did not, but nonetheless, there are reasons why they picked Noah Essengay, and we heard a lot of them explained last night. Mark Eversley, who will join us at 9 o'clock today, will further expound on that, but it was not a type of draft you walk away from, at least speaking from my perspective, like, all right, now we know.
Yeah.
Now we're going.
Now you got to go. He was exactly the type of player that we anticipated them drafting. Now, Derrick Queen, there was a trade made the minute they made the pick.
Right.
And Derrick
away.
Queen went off the board like that.
He was on the board and the Bulls picked Essengay.
Yes, he was.
Derrick Queen, the trade was made. He's in New Orleans on his way to be a Pelican.
Yes. An amazing bird is a Pelican. I thought they would take a player like that, just from everything we were hearing.
Like the one they took?
Yes.
Yes. Well, I think it's on brand.
Yes.
It's consistent
with
their approach. It reminds me very much this morning how we felt a year ago coming in trying to interpret the Matas Buzelis pick. It's very similar to me. And the difference is Matas Buzelis was rated higher and fell to the Bulls. But he was somebody that came to them with a lot of versatility, with a higher ceiling than a floor, and somebody that was drafted to be a guy that you built around and was consistent with your win-by-committee approach.
Yes.
It's a very understandable pick when you consider the Bulls are trying to approach this the way that, ideally, the best-case scenario, the way Oklahoma City did, the way the Indiana Pacers did. It's not one or two stars. It's a deep bench. And it's positionless basketball.
That's the concept. It's kind of part of I thought Kendall did a great job of describing the kind of player that he is, that he fits into sort of this long running both ends guy that is sort of an interchangeable piece, only they don't have a lot of guys like that. But he will be a guy that will run the floor, be good on the fast break. We know they're now kind of a wide-open running team, and he fits stylistically what they want to do.
Rim runner, rim protector,
both. Yeah,
I think those are his strengths, as we are told. Haven't seen a lot of video of Noah Essengay, not going to mm-hmm. lie. The one thing that I do want to know more about as we explore who he is and what he's capable of, Molly, when we talk about Derek Queen being on the board and their yes. perceived resistance to him because he didn't fit their style of play,
right?
I can accept that, I suppose. Over years, I'll learn to. But I think that when you go in and if this is somebody who does fit,
yes,
it doesn't seem consistent with the fact that he's not a very good shooter.
Well, I mean, he's not a very experienced player. He's another young Frenchman, French teenager. You know, we wanted them to get an 18-year-old. Mm-hmm. We were just hoping it was Cooper Flagg. This is well, a long time ago.
He's much older than Cooper Flagg, at least 3 days.
He's 4 days, 3 days?
Yeah.
Okay. But he's
a veteran.
He's not, you know, I also, when I was watching some of the video of his play, and I couldn't even tell you what the German league is called, right? I mean, and I'm sure they have a cool name.
What's the name for the German soccer league?
The Bundesliga.
Bundesliga, yeah, yes. Okay. Yes. I remember that during the pandemic, because that was one of the first leagues to come back, correct?
Yes, the Bundesliga.
Okay. That's what I remember about that.
Quickly.
I'm sorry for the digression.
Not at all. But I think that when you watch him play in that league, you couldn't help but wonder, like, what level would that translate to in terms of making a jump from that league to the NBA? Mm-hmm. Is that a college conference thing? Is that a kind of minor league, more or less G League type of thing?
It's a very good question, because he had some success
yes.
against that caliber of competition.
Right.
And he has been a professional basketball player.
He's played professionally.
So this is somebody who comes to America for his first taste in the NBA, and you wonder how that will translate.
Speaking excellent English, by the way.
He's very skilled at that already.
You can't help but wonder.
He's a bright young man.
Yeah, you can't help but wonder, does he speak German after living in Germany? How many languages does this kid have
at
age 18?
If that was asked last night, I missed it.
Yeah.
But I would like to know that. I'm sure it's something we can find out. I also wonder this.
But I think that's a good question for Mark Eversley when we speak to him later in the show. Just how do you translate? Like, you're looking at people playing in different, whether it's
Mark
Slovakia,
Eversley. Spain.
Britain. Didn't Mark Eversley
play? He was born in London.
But didn't he play in that British
league? I believe he did.
I'm just saying, those leagues don't seem to be very obvious in terms of their connection to the NBA or as sort of feeder systems to the NBA. I'm just curious, what is it that you learn about a guy playing?
And I wonder how that factors into your evaluation of
yes.
him and the competition level, seeing
exactly.
him do certain things, dominate the rebounding perhaps, or play a brand of defense that you like. But we won't know until he's here. And I think what this also underscores is that this is a very as people get ready to snicker, this is a very patient front office, and it's operating as such.
Yes.
This is a front office that didn't go into this draft with the win now mandate. They went into this draft, and I'm not sure who that would have represented. I don't know if you go into a draft thinking, you know, but sometimes if that were the case in the mindset, you might get somebody who fits immediately into rotation, replacing somebody here or there. That's not the case here.
Well, we chatted briefly on this question this morning. How long would it take for him to make an impact? How long does an 18-year-old who's coming from a kind of minor league comparatively, although having played professionally, how long is that translation into an impactful NBA player?
I think in today's league, that's harder to answer than ever.
Yeah.
Because a year ago, again, we were sitting here, and this is the relevant comparison, because or the more easy to identify with. Matas Bezelis, a year ago, we came in the morning after the draft.
Yeah.
We asked the same question about him, and we thought it was maybe 2 years.
G League.
We thought it was G League and then contribution, and then, oh, okay, that's what they have, and we'll see it. It'll be obvious to everyone. He did not spend 5 minutes in the G League. He all of a sudden became a guy good enough to become a cornerstone, second team all rookie, I believe. And so I don't want to say we were wrong about Matas Bezelis, but we didn't know a lot of things that they did at the time that they drafted him.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. I really do. And I don't know if the same amount of information is out there about this player, Noah Essanay. I can't see how it would be. But, you know, they were looking at other players of similar ilk who went later in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
Not like that much.
Joan Berenger.
Berenger went, what, 17, I believe?
17.
Yeah. And he's, the description of him is very similar to the description of this guy. I think Asa Newell went 23rd. So, again, the description of these guys, all very similar. Now, you know, Newell was playing for Georgia, but it's just that body, that kind of body shape. The long runner, you know, rim protector, if that is what he is.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the kid is apparently a fairly decent defensive player. Although, how do you know that?
How do you know that?
Is that
I was going to go back to what,
based
we, what
on
you
the
said.
Scouting combine? Well, I mean, what, how do you
based
know
on
that?
The competition level he's going against well, now, it's very difficult to project.
Right.
And I think that when you trust your scouts and you trust your own sensibilities and you trust your own basketball eyes, as the Bulls have in this case, it's somewhat a leap of faith for everybody else, because you're trusting them to know what they're watching and to
yes
and to bring in somebody who's exactly going to right. help, if not immediately, over the long haul.
Yes.
And I think there's it's always like this in any sport, but there's strength in numbers. So if there were other people and other teams that had high evaluations of Noah Essanay, it makes you feel better about your own.
Yeah.
Because I suppose that if the Bulls would not have taken him at 12, would the Pelicans have taken him at 13? Would he have gone, would he have lasted longer than the 15th pick?
Yeah, I think the very fact that they rushed up and traded for Queen tells you Queen would have gone at 12 if they were picking, in my opinion.
I wonder about Derek Queen, the division of opinion over him coming into right. this draft, and how many teams, perhaps like the Bulls, unfortunately, might regret the fact that he was passed over.
Yeah, I think it's a worthy question. I do think that that Noah Essanay and the other guys we've mentioned are part of a differing trend. I think that more teams are going with guys that can run like that. They can get out. They can protect the rim on the break. And the, you know, this is not a very big man. If he's 6'10", he's tall, but there's a lot of meat to put on that frame in order for him to really.
He needs to make himself an NBA body.
Yes, he does.
He's in search of an NBA body.
Right.
And until he gets to that point, it's very much, let's face it, we're talking around it a little bit, but
yeah.
it's very much a developmental pick.
It's a developmental pick, no question.
And so this yep. is a team in developmental mode.
And as you said, that patience is surprising, not from a standpoint of they just got new paper and they can afford to be patient, just from a standpoint of where they were and how they're playing right now. And they're in development mode while the Eastern Conference is sitting there rotting on the vine.
The Eastern Conference is there to be taken, and it's there for the Bulls taking. I don't want to say just the Bulls, but every
sure.
Eastern Conference city.
Yes.
That, as they wake up this morning, has to look at it, where they are in proximity to the top of the Eastern Conference. And every team, every city is closer than they were 2 weeks ago before all the injuries happened.
No
and
question.
We've gone over those. But if you're the Bulls this morning, do you feel like you've closed the gap?
Well, I mean, what you've done is you've brought in a different style of player to fit a style you plan on playing. But, like, how old is Vooch? 33, 34?
Old
point?
Enough to be on the trading block.
He's on the trading block, fair enough. But I don't believe this is a replacement for him. This
no.
is not the same skill
no.
set. But this is moving on from him in terms of getting a taller guy that can run the floor and play.
Stylistically, youthfully, in every way. You're exactly right. It isn't a comparison in terms of styles that is apples to apples, but in terms of, or even a roster spot, one is going to replace the other.
Right.
But it does reflect, I think, a change in approach.
Yes.
Both in the style with which they play and also the timeline.
Oh, yeah, the timeline.
I'm not sure that this did anything to shrink the timeline.
No, that's a good point.
And I think that's the one thing that is a little bit hard to interpret, because we're all looking at here and we're going to spend the whole day trying to figure out Noah's Ark, if you will, of development.
Look at you.
And I think that it's going to be hard to reconcile that with what, as a fan base and a media core, you feel like is a sense of urgency.
Hey, Lord, I'll build you a floating zoo. Oh, my God.
The animals are pairing up.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
We got some green alligator. Noah's Ark.
So this will be fun to talk about today. And I think it will be instructive when we talk to Mark Eversley at 9 o'clock. Casey Johnson will have his thoughts at 8. I was with Casey last night at the Chicago lead. Talked to him a little bit before the Bulls made their pick. He was very good. And he's very positive about this being a player that it seemed to excite him. And has a good profile. I just want to know more.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a lot of uncertainty about it. You know, I'd love to see a summer league game. Let's get to that portion.
Is he
going to
play in the summer league?
I don't know. You're right. He played 4 days ago. He played in the German league.
He did, but
4 days.
Let's talk
ago.
About that for a brief minute, and we can get into it more later. He left his German league team in the championship round.
Yeah, apparently.
To come and work out for NBA teams and to attend the draft.
Well, I mean, does that not make sense? He's trying to get into the NBA, the toughest league. I mean, would he have been drafted higher if he stayed in Germany? I don't think so.
Really?
No, I think he made an impression at the scouting combine and proved he can run the floor and all that.
I thought the tournament that he left was last weekend. And his German team might have been in contention or in the middle of a playoff round.
And I don't know any of this, David, but they have all sorts.
Yeah.
They have all sorts of different competitions that you're in Europe that you don't have other than the NBA Cup, which is designated to be earlier
I guess
in the season.
The only thing I'm curious about is if whether his German teammates were as enthused about him getting drafted by the Bulls as some people in America.
Do the fine German teammates feel betrayed?
Yes, that's all I'm wondering.
I don't know.
I don't know the circumstances, and I think that it was vague last night. We got a lot of information last night.
Yes,
and he's definitely new to the scene, but that was not a question that came up. But it just one of those things that in the back of your mind, like, I wonder how they felt. I wonder how the coach felt about him taking off.
I found last night to be somewhat exhausting because I tried to do some deep dives on different guys. I hadn't really done one on Noah Essengay. And then it's
guilty
like
as charged.
All the work, all the wasted time of looking at different guys on tape. Let's get back and see what this guy
can Let me do. Tell you about Kasper's Jakusconis. I know everything about that kid because I thought if he was on the board and the Bulls are picking 12, there's no way that he's dropping.
Did that go through your head they were going to take him?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought about that for a second, too.
I did. I thought so.
I thought, oh, no, you know, you can't do that.
I thought for sure.
Right.
And he drops to 20. Congratulations to him.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a terrible thing to put it the way we put
Two Illinois
it.
People drafted, players drafted back-to-back.
Right.
20 and 21st, and that was good. And I don't mean any disrespect to Jakusconis.
No.
I just think he was a duplicate part on this Bulls roster. Sure. That's the only reason
This is different. This is 6'10", run the floor. This is different. I wish he was 7'1", frankly, but that's okay.
He's still growing. He's 18.
Yeah, who knows? He's 18 years old.
He could have another growth spurt in him.
He could have a growth spurt on the flight over.
You know who did like him, and I'm sure he'll be somewhere today talking about it, Stacey King.
Oh, was Stacey
King was in on Noah Essengay on social media. I believe that he called this shot, perhaps.
Good for him.
Yeah, so he knows what he's watching. So we're going to have a big day talking about the Bulls' choice. Today's also Shota time. It's Shota time.
Yeah, it's Shota day. And he went down with the hamstring, remember, running over to cover first base.
Seems like
that
a long
was
time
on
ago.
May 4th.
May 4th.
So that's all. You know, he went on the 15-day disabled, the injury list, 15-day shortly there, you know, right after that, but it counted to that day, and it's been a lot longer than that.
Mm-hmm. It's been
we've waited
longer than we expected, but not missed. Maybe we should. Maybe we expected too much because it is the first hamstring injury he's had to deal with. The Cubs have been incredibly patient and smart, cautious, as they should be.
We'll find out.
Well, he needs to go out there today and hopefully look like the guy that he's always been with the Cubs.
Yeah, we'll talk about our expectations for him. We'll get that out there, make sure that we all are
on the record.
Yeah.
Yeah, we need to be on the record.
That'll be fun.
White Sox won a game.
White Sox with a big win. Big win
with
for
a big
the White
win,
Sox.
But a big
Well, Lenin Sosa, because of Luis Robert.
Luis Robert left in the first inning.
Well, not only, I mean, Luis Robert is doing enough to ensure he doesn't get traded by playing. But I would imagine by not playing, he may be even doing more.
If we're counting, and we need to do this, and I hesitate to say it out loud because it's on me that I haven't done this.
Mm-hmm.
But how many injuries is this for Luis Robert Jr.
God.
This year. No, I'm talking about this year.
I thought you were going
No. It's only a 4.5-hour show.
It's only like the second one, and it wasn't
I think it's third.
One. Is it third?
I think it's the third different injury.
But this one might require an injury list, right?
It could.
It seems like
hammy.
It should. Yeah. It
so
like
it's a hamstring, and if you go 10 days, 15 days, you got talking a couple weeks, comes back, and who's going to take on burden?
I mean, Bob Nightingale, you don't often read this, but he said the odds that they're going to trade him, 100%.
Yes, but he also said this, and this is the dangerous part about what else he wrote. He's 100%, but that was before the injury. He also wrote after the 100% is they do not want him.
Oh, I mean, they don't want to pick up that deal.
They're stuck with a guy now. They announced and telling everybody who will listen, they do not want, and now they must keep him.
Must they? Because they could still end up not picking up the option and letting him go, couldn't
Nobody
they?
Else wants him.
That's a problem.
Well, that's a problem for another day. But, yeah, the White Sox won. The Cubs' bats came alive, and the NBA draft was entertaining.
The Cubs to a bats point. Came alive. The idea that the first pitch, you put that one out, that was like, oh, the Cubs have come to play today. Didn't you get that sense?
Ian Happ was aggressive. I love that.
Boom,
from the
goes
jump.
The dynamite.
And the game was over in the fifth inning, as Craig Counsell said.
It's true.
And now today.
Felt like it was over earlier.
Matthew Boyd has been their best pitcher.
He's been good.
I think he's been their best starting pitcher.
Yeah.
It's better than J-Mo.
Yeah, that's unfair to J-Mo. I think J-Mo was pretty good. It's just, I think you got to listen to what guys say when they're talking. When Jameson Taillon talked about this idea that, you know, it's been, the season has been easy and now it's more difficult. You go through so much as a pitcher over 162
I know what
games.
You're saying with due respect to J-Mo, but
yeah.
Matthew Boyd hasn't had a bad start.
He had one bad start.
Maybe one.
Yeah.
I think he's been their best starting
pitcher.
Didn't
he have a bad start? Where was it?
Against the Reds.
Against the Reds, he had a bad start.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe you're right.
He gave up like five runs. But he gives up, I think, five or six starts in a row, two runs or less.
Mm-hmm.
But he's never really had to step into that, I'm the main guy.
Oh, no. No, the pressure is
I think that's a fictional place.
I think it exists.
I think it's a fictional a place that we create.
All right. Well, we'll get into it. We'll get into all of it. We'll talk about all the stories of the day. We'll do it next in the Pick Six. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
What do we think of the Bulls' choice at number 12? How satisfied or dissatisfied are you with the pick, the explanation, the players they passed up? Is there a word that comes to mind to describe all that happened at the Advocate Center?
Yeah, I think that I don't know that I'm satisfied or dissatisfied. I think this was a pick for the future. I think that this kid has a chance to be good as they get better. I'm trying to be fair about it. If I had one word, it might have been a curse word, as it happened, to be brutally honest with you, because it was tough to see Derek Queen go literally a pick after, when we had talked all about him and what he can do and how he plays the game. And I just didn't buy the idea that that he wasn't going to be successful in the NBA because he, you know, didn't have this great athleticism. The guy can shoot, and that's an important part of basketball. And when you get a guy that can score, then you got a chance to make him into a different type of player. But, you know, you just got to see now how competitive this guy is. You know, Giannis Antetokounmpo went much later in a draft, built himself an NBA body, and became an MVP in the NBA. So I think you got to – it's up to the kid now. It's up to Noah Essengue is how good he wants to be. And we'll find out. But the word that came to my mind was sort of a silent curse.
My first reaction was, who? I thought, but I wasn't surprised that it was an international player. I was all geared up. I mean, it was almost like how we handled the NFL draft. Like, I took the responsibility for the station, like, to go try to find the coach right away or go to the school. And and I'm like, well, now I don't have anything to do because I'm not going to even try to start figuring out how to get a hold of France at 9 o'clock at night on a Wednesday. It was just who? But when you start reading some things and hearing some things, he is prototypical of what the NBA wants right now. When you look at the rosters of teams that won in the playoffs, they've got a lot of guys that are built the same way that Noah Essengue is built. Here, you know, the question is, you know, do we hear two-way a lot with this? Two-way. How many other, though, you know, one of the Bulls' biggest problems, if not biggest problem, is they got a lot of one-way guys. You know, you can't have four one-way guys and one two-way guy and think that anything's going to happen on the other way, which is the defensive way. Right, so listen. I think the ceiling's outrageous. If he's Scottie Pippen, Siakam, okay, great. But it's a long way to go. He's 18.
The first word that came to mind when I saw the pick made, honestly, was underwhelming. And I don't know that that's a fair reaction, because there are reasons to believe that he's going to be a very good NBA player. You look at his background and you see how he projects and this, why he fits and all their patient approach. It's defensible. It's a defensible pick. It just seemed underwhelming for me personally, because I think there were other players on the board that you preferred. There were other players that maybe you knew more about. And this is very much a curiosity. Noah Essengue is not somebody that the city of Chicago, most basketball fans, know a ton about. Now, we're not all Stacey King, and we didn't all call the shot and understand what they're getting necessarily. This is a very patient pick, because it's a front office that feels very secure in what they're doing. And you can like that or not, and you can resist that or not, but it's the truth. And this confirms that. They're not in any rush to get to the top four of the Eastern Conference, apparently, because this is going to take some time. And I think if we pulled the tape a year ago, the morning after the draft, and they picked Montrezl Bozelis, we said some very similar things. So maybe this will be another example of that. But I was definitely underwhelmed at first glance.
It was my question. It's kind of a dumb question.
That's KC Johnson. No dumb questions from KC. He'll join you at 8 o'clock this morning. Who won the NBA's draft first round? What player do you think was the biggest sleeper, and who is the biggest bust?
Well, I think that the Utah Jazz did pretty well. They have Ace Bailey, who had a very curious pre-draft process, wanted to apparently, reportedly, get to a bigger market, and then he has to go live in Salt Lake City. That huge market of Salt Lake City, where they have some nice mountains, apparently, according to Ace. But then they also get Walter Clayton Jr. in the first round. So they get inside, they get outside, they get two players that probably will contribute immediately. I think the Brooklyn Nets are still taking players. I mean, how many first-rounders do they have on their roster?
Five, right?
Yikes.
They got a team.
But I don't know if that wins the draft. I don't know if quantity equals quality, even though it is a nice haul. But I would think the Utah Jazz comes to mind. The sleeper, I think that as much as I wanted the Bulls to resist Yakushonis because of the duplicate part, the Miami Heat getting him at 20, that's as big of a value as I think you're going to get in the first round.
And it's great for him.
It's great for him, and I think that Heat culture will bring out the best in him. He'll play to his strengths, and that is somebody who's going to have – you look back in a decade, and he'll still be playing. Somewhere, somehow, he'll be contributing because it just that is a very good pick. The bust, or I think the pick that was hardest to understand, even harder than maybe to research than the Bulls, when – I think it was the Trailblazers. Yes, it was the Trailblazers. Yang Hansen from China did not expect that to happen. Did not know much about him. And it's just made you scratch your head and say, who?
Yeah, there was a lot of who's. There's a lot of. I feel like I watch a lot of college basketball. There's a lot of who's. I mean, in the top 10, I knew five. And I feel like I only knew Dylan Harper because we kind of live in Big Ten country, even though Rutgers is probably the farthest school away from the Big Ten, right? Well, not anymore, but at the moment it was. Now UCLA and USC and Oregon, all those. You know, who got better instantly? Well, how about the Spurs, right? Dylan Harper at number two. So you're pairing him up with Wemby. And then you move down a little bit farther, and you got this Carter Bryant kid Arizona,
yeah,
who played on a team that was kind of, for college basketball, kind of veteran heavy. This kid came out, didn't play a whole lot.
Came off
so,
the bench,
you know, maybe that's a team that's kind of getting closer, going in the right direction. You know, the Houston Rockets, like, that guy's gonna play right away. Like, he's gonna contribute. He's gonna contribute right away. If you believe that the East is now down because of all the Achilles tendon injuries, did the Atlanta Hawks all of a sudden get within the top five in the East with the moves that they make, especially if you believe in Derrick Queen, then maybe they're all of a sudden a top five team in the East to go along with the trade they made for Porzingis. And obviously they've got the sharpshooter from Oklahoma, right? So they've got some people. So, you know, the biggest draft bust, I just don't like a kid like Ace Bailey from the standpoint of trying to do things to end up somewhere else, then just let it play out. I mean, it just seems like it's a bad precedent. I hope the kid does great. I'm not rooting against the kid. I just think that he might end up disappointing because he took this path.
Yeah, I think the draft was one by Dallas on the night of the draft lottery. I mean, they got the premier player, the college player of the year, the kid that probably should have won a championship. And what can you say about that? Phoenix did well with the Duke center. That was a good pick. That got that
Malawak
kid
dropping there
to 10.
It makes it a lot different to look at the Durant trade now.
That's a good way of putting it. It's a really good swap out at the 10th pick in the draft. So congratulations to them. I agree with what you're saying about Ace Bailey. He's got to be the ultimate loser of the draft because he didn't mind losing money to go to the – oh, wait, you're in Utah. That's just not the way that he tried to play this thing, and it's very interesting, and we'll see how that works out. Could be a hell of a player. You know, he's got – I think a lot of people wonder about his maturity, but nobody wonders about his game. He can play. I think those are all kind of good examples of stuff. I don't know if there's a single team that we're going to look back on and say you know, wow, they made the playoffs because the heady move they made in the NBA draft. But eventually, I think some of these guys will be really good players. I think we will do a redraft in another couple of years, and here's hoping that Patrick Williams doesn't star in the redraft.
How high will Essengay go in the redraft?
I understand the question.
That is the voice of the skipper, Craig Counsell. What was the best part of the Cubs' offensive outburst against the Cardinals? Can we agree that Craig Counsell is very level-headed and his unflappable approach serves the Cubs well in times of crises? Anything you didn't like about the game Wednesday night?
I thought that the game, I honestly thought that Ian Happ leading off with the first swing home run made a statement about how that game was going to go. And the very fact that they jumped on it and they were up 5-0 before the game even really began, was it 2 innings in? That was a good feeling. The game was over fairly early. I thought Craig Counsell did very well with his answer yesterday afternoon, talking about baseball and the kind of, you know, it's a ride. And the ups and the downs of a season, and it's, you know, he's so right about that. That is a really good way. The beauty of the game is kind of strap in, and here you go. Oh my God, they're going to be great! Oh, you know, the tick, tick, tick up, and then the sudden fall is always really cool. And I think that he's playing that. He's coaching that way. He understands how baseball season goes. And they did a good job yesterday. And here's hoping that Shota coming back means you get a series split, and that changes your weekly fortune.
Well, we said that it was a statement game. It wasn't necessarily must win, but it was definitely a statement game. And that was a heck of a statement, as you said, by Ian Happ. First pitch, out she went. You know, Pat had a great description of it. You know, that's the way to get things going, right? A curtain riser. It just, everything about it was fantastic. The other good news was that only half the runs came from the home run ball. So they scored 8 runs. Four of the runs came off the home runs. 4 of the runs did not come off. So it wasn't home run or bust. They're still striking out too much. They struck out 8 times as a team last night. That's far, far too many. Tucker twice. Happ twice. Swanson twice. Swanson, though, did have 2 hits. Mm-hmm. And Swanson still batting 5th. I still would like him and Michael Bush or Nico Horner to flop spots. But that, we'll see if that, you know, and I, is Craig, yeah, his level-headedness, I'm sure, plays well. I am not level-headed, if you've listened to the show for more than 2 days in a row. So that, he's definitely level-headed. And I'm going to dare to say this, and this is why it's good that I don't take the social media outside of basically during we're on the air or just show related types of things. I almost was a little bit bored. It was almost too easy of a win, right? It was almost too boring for Cubs Cardinals.
You are never happy
for Cubs Cardinals. It was almost too boring.
That's crazy.
Hearing Craig Counsell talk about the PCA situation and then being interviewed in the afternoon show and not taking any of the bait and not really going anywhere but exactly where he stays in the center. And everybody's got a role to play. I say that all the time. His role, he's perfectly suited for. He doesn't really change from day to day. PCA can do what he did the other night and lose track of the outs, and he can bunt when he should have been swinging away. And Craig Counsell will talk honestly about who did what and why, but he won't get too carried away in saying he's got to do this and he's got to do that. Every day is just every day, and he approaches it the same way. He is ideally suited for the job of baseball manager over the course of a 162-game season, and in that last 6 or 8 months, it's just a grind, and he doesn't really let it show. Yesterday, there wasn't anything not to like. It wasn't boring. There wasn't one bit of boredom that set in with the Cubs are having 8. What do you want,
David? They had the 8 runs in the 5th.
What do you want?
I felt too comfortable.
That's when you feel good.
No back sweats.
Yeah, you know, enjoy your air conditioning. Sip some lemonade. Have a Mick Ultra. Whatever you do, you know. It's enjoy. You just take a...
I wanted one last night, too. I stayed away.
Sigh of relief. And it was a sigh of relief because the Cubs needed that one. It was a must-win statement something. And today's even bigger.
So when you just asked that question, I started racking my brain. Off the top of my head, I don't even know.
That's the voice of Tommy Hotovy joining you guys at 7:25. What are your expectations from Shota Imanaga later today and his return from the IL? The game, of course, in St. Louis, 12:40 pregame. Shota suffered a left hamstring injury while covering first base all the way back on May the 4th and then was placed on the 15-day IL. How many innings will he go? Will he get a win today?
Craig Counsell did acknowledge they're going to have to take a little bit of a cautious approach. They're going to be smart and conservative with somebody who has been out as long as he's been out. 5 innings, 87 pitches, 2 runs, and the Cubs leave St. Louis with a split.
I'm going to say 4 innings, 70 pitches. Cubs are going to win. I don't think Shota necessarily will get the win. I honestly don't care who gets the win today as long as the Cubs get the win and as long as Shota comes out of it okay. With this heat and everything, you want to make sure that his conditioning is good. You want to make sure he's complete, you know, very hydrated. So they're going to be really careful. I mean, if somehow the Cubs jump on the Cardinals again, let's say they're up 5-0 after 3 innings, I could see them going to somebody that early and just say, okay, thank you, you broke a nice sweat, Shota. We'll save you for the next one.
If he leaves after 4, you're going to be okay paying attention for the final 5 innings?
Oh, yeah, I'll keep patting Ron on, no doubt about it.
He'll be bored out of his mind again. Yeah, I think 5 would be the most he's going to go. I mean, I think 5, 4 Ks, 2 runs allowed, that would be a very good, solid outing for his first time back. He could be a little bit better than that. I don't think he'll be much worse than that. I really don't. I don't think it's going to be a real cause for concern. I think we're going to feel like he had a positive start when all is said and done. I think when we come in here tomorrow, I think we're going to feel better about everything because he's going to kind of solidify things like you hoped he would.
We'll feel better about things, and we'll tell Dustin what happened after the 6th inning.
Because he'll have crawled into his cups.
I can't believe I'm being accused of turning it off. I didn't turn it off. I just said it was a little too easy. For Cubs Cardinals.
I can't believe I've been accused of turning it off.
I guess the question that you asked me rather than answering it directly is...
That is the voice of Bruce Levine. He joins you at 8:44. Have we neglected Lenin Sosa when talking about the White Sox and their collection of young promising prospects? Sosa played 3 different positions. He's hit 2 home runs yesterday. He continues to thrive on 2 strike counts. How does he fit into the future?
Well, I don't believe that I have neglected him. I feel like I've mentioned, even when he was on the IL, that he was a good player who was going to come back and be a good player. I don't know how good a player he is. I don't think he's a 2-home-run-a-night guy, but that was good to see him hit 2 home runs in a night, first time ever. I like Lenin Sosa. I think he's a solid player. I don't think that, I don't think he's their all-star. I don't think he's going to be a future all-star, but I think he's a solid, good baseball player who fits in because they don't have a lot of guys that do fit in. I don't think he's a star guy, but I think he's a really solid, you know, kind of rank-and-file baseball player with a chance to get better as his career goes on. I like him. I like Lenin Sosa. But no, I don't feel like we need to kind of build him up and make up stories like how great he is or anything.
Nobody's making up
stories. That's kind of how we
roll here.
Who's making up stories how great he is?
No one.
You know, batting 7th, playing 2nd base with that kind of production on offense, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. He's not supposed to be the leader of the team, but if you put some other people up at the top of that order and he's your 6th or 7th guy, you could definitely live with that.
Yeah, he's 25 years old, and I think he's been up since, well, he's 2023. He played 52 games. It's just that he's not one of those guys that when we project the future White Sox infield, you don't hear his name come up a lot. I think last year he had a couple bad episodes where maybe he revealed himself as maybe not the player is always as plugged in as you would like. But this year he's had some better moments, and he's had some versatility that they've taken advantage of. So he's somebody that is more part of the solution than the problem, and that's a good place to be. Yesterday with two homers, they were welcome. Nobody's going to overstate it or make something out of it. But he's definitely a guy you can
never
can justify
with a White Sox player.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
Did you like seeing the White Sox give Ketel Marte a standing ovation, including a sign on the scoreboard that read, quote, baseball is family. The White Sox community supports Ketel Marte, end quote. How about the 22-year-old fan that heckled him being banned, not just from the rate, but from all 30 stadiums by MLB?
That was definitely proactive. The White Sox organization responded as they should have, with strength and support, and Ketel Marte left Chicago feeling like he was heard and the White Sox organization supported him, and all of baseball supported him. It was a classless, unacceptable act. The White Sox showed how unacceptable it was by banning the fan. It shouldn't happen at a baseball game, something like that. It was upsetting. They responded the way that you would want your team in your town to respond. Good for the White Sox. And you wish Ketel Marte well.
Home run, David. Everything you said, I agree with. I think the baseball, MLB handled it correctly. The White Sox handled it correctly. Again, the White Sox arrow is pointing in the right direction.
Yeah, congratulations to the White Sox. They handled it really well. They did the right thing on the night by getting rid of the kid and kicking him out. And I keep calling him a kid. He's 22 years old. That has got to be pretty rough to be banned from all Major League Baseball fields at the age of 22. It's just you got a lot of your life to watch baseball on TV or in a nearby tavern. I'm not saying it's wrong. You're 22. You're a grown man. You can sign a legally binding document, have a cocktail, whatever. But it's tough. I've got some 20-year-olds in the house, and I don't think they'd ever do anything like that, but I hope they wouldn't. But, you just can't help but feel that's a serious thing. That was great that he got an ovation. Some people made signs and held them up, which was great to see. And the White Sox, they took something really bad, really negative, and they turned it into more of a positive. They did the right thing. Congratulations to the Chicago White Sox. All right, we got the extra point. Next, we're going to get right to it. It's Mully and Haw on the score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
What did you make of Bob Nightingale's report yesterday that the Cubs are pursuing starter Mitch Keller, reliever David Benar from the Pirates? Keller is a former All-Star with a 1-10 record this year, but the splits, well, not so bad. He does have three more years at over $55 million coming after this season. Benar is on a one-year deal.
David Benar is more appealing than Mitch Keller. I think you can never have too many arms in the bullpen. If Bob Nightingale is saying that the Cubs are in on one or both, if he had to pick one over the other, I'll take Bednar. He had 39 saves in 2023. He was an All-Star in back-to-back seasons. He does have a pedigree that gets you a little bit more excited. Mitch Keller is one big pile of meh. I don't know that it's going to make me feel better about the Cubs chasing the Dodgers and the Padres and the Mets if Mitch Keller's here. All right. No problems. We got Keller and Shota, and then everything else is fine. Put J-Mo in the three spot. I don't know if I like that. And I don't know if this report, air quotes, this report is softening things and lowering expectations. You want Jed Hoyer to go out and get a top-of-the-rotation starter. And if you're a Cub fan, you do want that to be the chorus. Keep pushing. Keep the pressure on. saying Mitch Keller could come here and compete for a third or fourth starter role. No, I didn't really like that. I was nonplussed, as they say.
One big pile of meh. That's going to live.
Pile of meh.
Meh. Love it, David. I agree. Mitch Keller does nothing. You're looking for an ace. You're looking for a guy to give the ball to in game one of the NLDS, or at least game two, right? Does that mean that Mitch Keller, to me, says they trust Mitch Keller from afar more than they trust Jameson Taillon? That's what that says to me almost. Like that doesn't, no. Mm-mm. They got enough threes and fours. They don't need that. I like the idea of another arm in the bullpen. Can't have enough of those kind of guys.
I can read you a tweet here from Bruce Levine, who said, confirming, Pirates and Cubs have talked about Mitch Keller. Bob Nightingale first report interest. Getting deal done is challenging because of seller's market. One GM said to me, 25 teams still feel like they have a wild card chance. So Mitch Keller learned to love him. Get on that.
No.
Get on that pile.
I'm not learning to love him yet. He's not here. He's in a Pirate uniform.
He's in a pile. I was born on a pirate ship with ashes all around me. That was from my childhood. Did you have that one when you were a kid?
I don't recall that one.
Yeah, be careful. I won't tell you what you're supposed to do. But I will hold my tongue on such information. But I do think that this is kind of where they're at. This is exactly, I believe this is the guy that Bruce probably was talking about, and they probably have gone down the road a little bit on a Mitch Keller. And wasn't he an all-star in 2023? I mean, I get it. He's 1-10. Now, that's a terrible team, and it's not all his fault. I think his ERA is like in the fours, right?
It's 4.02.
Yeah, it's just four. I mean, I can understand how you feel, but this is kind of the reality of life in Major League Baseball right now.
Well, I think it's just a reflection of the expectations being up here.
Yes.
And this report putting the reality right here.
Yeah.
In the middle.
And he's got 3 years after this. So you take on a portion of this salary and then you'd owe
Thanks
him,
for the warning.
You owe him $55 million plus for the next 3 years.
They can do better than that. You're the Cubs. You should do better than that. I don't know. He goes to the bump, 16 yep. starts this year. Yep. I get it, but this is not the over the top move.
No,
this is not the over the top move.
It doesn't feel like this is the move that gets you.
He was an all star in 2023. He was 13-9, and he's steady. And I think he's a fine lad. He's from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. He's friends with Colin Ray. They work out together in the off season. I know all of the backstory. You'd think I would love it, and I do, but he's not the guy that puts it over the top.
312-644-6767. Where are you at with the Bulls and where are you at with the Cubs? We'll be right back. 312-644-6767. Mully and Haw on the Score.
With the 12th pick in the 2025 NBA draft, the Chicago Bulls select Noah Essengay from Saint-Jean-du-Bray, France. And the Ulm Club in Germany.
Let's go! Let's go!
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 Score.
Who was that?
That's somebody who's like on the stage.
Could it be a fan?
I don't know, but...
Was it an analyst?
Did you hear it? You got to listen carefully. We might have to play that again. As the Adam Silver announces the pick, you hear a voice in the background that says, I never heard of him.
Never heard of that guy.
With the 12th pick in the 2025 NBA draft, the Chicago Bulls select Noah Essengay from Saint-Jean-du-Bray, France, and the Ulm Club in Germany.
Was that a live?
Let's go! And then they showed fans in the stands.
Could that be a live feed from the Advocate Center in the media room?
Oh, my God. That's funny.
Yeah.
Never heard of that guy.
Well,
It's like the perfect.
He was on the radar of NBA teams. Yeah, he was on the radar of NBA media.
He was on the list. Yeah.
I think Casey Johnson was very up to date on who he was.
He was there.
He was there.
He was one of the 24.
Yes. And he was very positive in the review. He will get good reviews. It's just he's not a household name. Neither was Matas Bezelis a year ago.
Never heard of that guy.
Matas Bezelis had the advantage of at least being local from Hinsdale.
Yeah.
People knew who he was. At least, you know, there was some familiarity. I think Noah Essengay is a curiosity right now. And not maybe to the Bulls or the NBA scouting community, but to fans. Yeah, there's going to have to do some research. A lot of Googling of Noah Essengay today and last night.
Yeah, I stand accused. You know, there are certain people you check out on Twitter to see what they have to say. And Frank Fraschilla said, he basically said that the Bulls are in, they remain in sort of NBA purgatory. But he, you know, he described him pretty well as a pretty decent player, exactly what we've been talking about, a kind of a guy that can run the floor, et cetera.
He's not a good shooter.
No, he's not.
That's the one thing that is that when you look at how he fits into a team that drafted based on their scheme and style and approach, we heard that often. Going into the draft, did we not? Because that was the given reason, the stated reason for why Derek Queen did not appeal to the Bulls. Because he wasn't a guy that fit their 3-and-D approach, and this is somebody in Noah Essengay who does. When Noah Essengay goes 12th and Derek Queen goes 13th, it is inevitable, at least in pockets of Chicago. And I think we're sitting in one right now. At least in this pocket of Chicago, it's inevitable that those two players' careers, beginning as early as next year, will be compared.
Fran Fraschilla on Twitter, number 12, Chicago Bulls select third international player so far in France's Noah Essengay, extremely athletic young player who must get stronger and round out offensive skills, but great long-term potential. Bulls continue to live in NBA long-term, NBA purgatory, not bad enough to tear down, not good enough to get out of the play-in game.
This was a choice and a selection that reflected a front office that is operating with a sense of security.
Yes.
A sense of patience and a plan of being here for a while, and this is the way they're going to approach getting back to respectability. It's not the move of a front office that feels like you have to win now or that you need somebody to plug and play immediately. If that were the case, it would have been somebody different, I believe.
So you got Matas, you got Josh Giddey. They didn't trade Kobe. Apparently heard some talk about Kobe. And now you got this kid, and they will have more cap space than anyone else. They're projected to have the most cap space in 26, right? So that is your plan.
I understand that. And it's it's defensible. It's just that, and I don't want to be negative on this draft because it's too early to, it's premature to be too much of anything, I believe, because he is a project and he's projected to be a guy who can have a long, successful NBA career. But I do wonder how many draft nights have we heard about the free agent class of 2 years away or the draft class that you're planning for. It's always about later. It's always about later.
I would say, David, it's a project. You know, they draft some projects and you're waiting for the proof that they can turn them into players, right? I think it started with Matas last year. You felt like they handled him very well, and by the end of the year, he was developing. But we don't know. We don't know. They and it's tough to wait on guys to develop.
Let me ask you a big picture question that is not, again, it's related to this pick, but it also is probably, I think, related to many that we saw last night. It's about how the draft has evolved, because it used to be that we were so used to watching college basketball
yes.
and players stay for 2 and 3 and 4 years. And
yes.
when they entered the draft, not only were they ready to contribute because they were maybe more mature and accomplished,
yes.
we knew who they were because we had watched them on television playing for teams that were top 25 teams, Final Four teams.
Exactly right.
What happened last night was I think there were so many teenagers.
Well,
and the first eight players drafted were freshmen.
What happened last night was a reminder, if you needed one, that if there were no rule against drafting players like right out of high school, you'd be drafting players right out of high school.
It's a projection.
You would
it's
have
about,
a,
yeah.
five guys out of high school drafted to Brooklyn, and hopefully one of them became a player.
Unless you're Cooper Flagg or Ace Bailey or Dylan Harper. Last night's draft, and then maybe some other exceptions.
All but very young guys.
But the rule is the draft has become about the next several years, not the next several months.
No question.
And I think that we, and maybe I'm speaking about us, and we're of a certain age, that we remember when the draft used to be different in that way. It used to be you draft for guys who you could envision being the missing piece on a team that was had playoff aspirations or needed to get over the top. Somebody who fit and a plug-and-play guy. Somebody that we thought maybe that was Derek Queen for the Bulls. Wasn't Derek Queen.
He's still a very young guy.
Still a very young guy.
But, I mean, like, what you're talking about is James Worthy would come in. You would draft James Worthy, and he'd win a title, and he'd be a piece of it, big game James. You would take him out of North Carolina, and next thing you know, you'd be seeing him in the playoffs because he was on a team that had Magic and Kareem and the whole
in everything. Our heads and maybe on our screens
yeah.
we saw guys who were going from the Final Four team to a playoff contender in the
right.
NBA
right.
and they were making an impact immediately, and so that is no longer the NBA. Today's NBA is you got to wait for a couple years, you wait and see, you draft a project with skills and traits, athleticism of galore, but
You make people go to stay a year in college, and then you draft them at that point. And that's the only reason they spend a year in college. That's where we're at.
Yeah. And Duke had three of those players do that, and three of those guys went in the top 10 picks.
It's crazy. You're so right. Who was the oldest player taken?
Last night? That's a good question. I don't think that it would probably be...
Because a year ago, it was the shooter who went to the Lakers, right?
Yeah. Dalton Knecht?
Dalton Knecht was like the...
We were lamenting them missing on him last year.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of Matas Bezelis. And now a year later, who would you rather have?
Matas Bezelis.
Okay, so I think that is what I remember when I'm getting too underwhelmed by
yeah.
this.
Yeah, you're right.
You you're need right. to remind yourself of these kind of examples.
It's a good point. All right, we're going to get to all your phone calls, 312-644-6767. Don't forget, we got an action-packed show. Tommy Hotovy is going to join us at 7:25. We'll talk to Casey at 8. We'll talk to Bruce. We'll talk to Mark Eversley at 9 o'clock this morning and talk about the plan and how this fits the plan, and we'll see.
He's the Bulls general manager.
Oh, he is.
For those who don't know.
Yeah. He was the man that spoke yesterday.
Yeah,
and he did well. The plan didn't change, but the man talking about it did, and we'll get a chance to talk to him next, not next at 9. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 The Score.